The Ensemble podcast is intended for professional financial advisors. All discussion is limited to publicly available information and should not be interpreted as legal, professional, or financial advice. Ensemble does not hold an AFS license nor provide any financial services. Before making investment decisions, you should obtain financial advice from a qualified financial advisor.
Hi, I'm Andrew Rox from Ensemble, and I'm thrilled to be bringing to you the podcast Engine Room. It's devoted entirely to the practices or the business of financial advice. Over the course of the next many months, we're going to be interviewing Australia's best independent boutique advice firms, their practice managers, their GMs, on what environment is conducive to being a best practice, how they keep talent, how they attract talent, and what the future of financial advice is. It's the Engine Room podcast. Welcome aboard.
If you're one of the many advisors who told us, I don't need another good idea, I need support to actually implement, then this is for you. We have launched Ensemble Progress, a professional development membership built for advisors who want momentum, not just inspiration. With protected time to implement, peer-led accountability, and practitioners sharing what's actually working, Ensemble Progress helps you turn intention into consistent, visible results. Instead of the important work getting pushed to next quarter, it gets done. Find out more at ensemble.com/membership.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Engine Room. I'm front and centre at Tribeca Financial HQ in Hawthorne, Victoria. And it's a great pleasure that I'm here talking with Ryan Watson. How are you, Ryan?
I'm really good, Roxy. Thanks for having me on, mate.
Well, not only that, but thank you very much for the hospitality. I came in. There were some good beats going, really, really friendly team. And when I asked for a water, you're the only podcast ever to give me a tin of water, which we'll put in the notes there, Kieran, called My Good Life Tribeca Mineral Water. So tell me about that.
Yeah, it's direct from the Appalachian Mountains. No, it's not. No, we're obviously at Tribeca. We're quite passionate about who we are and our brand and building that through trust. And we had an opportunity through one of our clients, and her husband does a bit of that. So we thought, well, why don't we support people who support us?
Yeah, sounds good. Sounds good. And look, it's a, you know, I'm going to talk about how you got into financial advice. And from memory, I think there was a bit of McDonald's there. So there's always been a bit of food and bev running through it. Is that right?
Great training, McDonald's. Great. You know, you learn what to do, what not to do. Build confidence. I loved it.
Yeah. And also they gave you, you know, a really good lens on making sure that you did strive and do your education, because you know, $8.50 an hour at age 15 is probably not going to cut it.
Yeah, and I don't even reckon I'm getting that, Roxy. I'm thinking back to the 5:30 opens at Belmont in Geelong, Saturday and Sunday, a five-hour shift. I was collecting about $30. So it's probably about $6 an hour.
There you go. All you tradies who are after your double shot coffees with a caramel and whatnot in the morning, he says g'day. So, but yeah, so Geelong, you grew up in Geelong. You've made your way all the way to Melbourne up there. But you know, I had a look at yourself, and so I always ask people how they got into financial planning, because the wonderful thing about this profession and career is that it didn't exist in our parents or our parents' lifetimes.
Yeah.
So what made you sort of move in that direction?
Yeah, truth be told, probably like a lot of kids, teenage kids, especially I went to an all-boys Catholic school, so it was really revolving around footy, cricket, and probably extracurricular activities. So really good, strong friendship group, but finishing year 12, got an okay score, didn't know what to do. So what you do, Roxy, when you're in Geelong, you go and do commerce at Deakin U. You know, it's a solid 8 hours a week for probably 30 weeks a year. So did that. Finished the degree. I reckon I was about 6 months.
They don't check your 8 hours though back in the day.
No.
Yeah, there wasn't even that.
There was more than 8 hours a week probably put in the Warm Ponds Hotel, to be honest, at Geelong.
But nice.
So we did that. Went a little bit over time in terms of the course. So
just to double check a few things, was that right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Right. Yeah, well, we bought the double degree. So
yeah.
Did that.
Yeah.
But then didn't know what I wanted to do. So the opportunity to move to Melbourne. So I got a job at the Mercer Super Trust. Literally finished university on a Monday, or last exam on a Monday, had an interview on the Thursday, got accepted on the Friday, moved to Melbourne, self-moved on the weekend and started the following Monday at Mercer, 101 Collins Street, level 14.
So what was your undergraduate degree?
Arts Commerce.
Arts Commerce.
Yeah.
So a bit of life drawing and a bit of accounting.
Yeah, it was more the arts side was more like the journalism and the writing. I'm quite succinct in terms of that. So it just comes...
It is interesting. So do you do the copy on your website?
No, I don't actually. They don't trust me enough, Roxy, to do the copy.
It's actually good. There's good wordsmithery on your website.
But lately I've gone a bit rogue on my LinkedIn profile. So I've just started asking for forgiveness, and the feedback's been okay. No.
For self-feedback?
Oh, yeah, of course. Well, if you don't love yourself. But no, the Lisa and Liana, who are all things marketing for us at Tribeca, haven't had any complaints so far.
Well, I've had one of the ladies in here before, and when I did say, look, I'm going to ask you a few questions about yourself, she just rolled her eyes and said, that won't be a problem.
True.
But the good thing is a bit of self-confidence. But so you kicked off in 2003 at Mercer Master Trust.
Yeah.
What did that entail?
Yeah, it was interesting. So obviously coming off the back of university, and then you're doing admin. That's basically what you're doing. Probably coming out of uni. Didn't know a lot. Probably didn't know how to write an email, to be honest. But the opportunity to work in Melbourne, you know, big building, moving to a friend's place, and just get stuck into work. You know, throughout my, you know, I suppose my work resume, always had a strong work ethic, and I was really keen after 4 years at uni to get into the workforce. So worked there. Wasn't a lot of pressure. Met some really good people, some good Friday nights as well, and so expanded the network and did that for about 18 months.
And I noticed that you then bounced to OAMS, O-A-M-P-S, terrible.
OAMS.
OAMS.
Oil Agents Mutual Providence Society.
That's it. And that means the beginning of your career was 2003-2007. Without a shadow of a doubt, the most bubbly, dartboard throwing, easy to make money time in financial planning the last 40 years.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it was. So, but the step from Mercer Super Trust to OAMS meant I came into financial planning. So, you know, that was the thing for me. It was, okay, got a job in financial services, had the commerce degree, was always reasonable with money and like numbers. And the reconciliation for me, to use the operative term, was how can I help other people be better and make, you know, better decisions with their money? And at the same time, seem like a, you know, a good career choice in terms of, you know, creating wealth and knowledge for myself. So after 18 months at Mercer and did my grad dip in the background, at the Securities Institute when it was still around, and then moved to OAMS. So got an opportunity there.
Are you have you got any siblings at all? Where do you sit in the?
Yeah, so I'm the oldest. I've got one sister. So she's 2 years younger, 2 years younger than myself. She stayed in Geelong and I came up the highway.
Ensemble Progress is for advisors who want real momentum, not just inspiration. Find out more at ensemble.com/membership.
Because, you know, reading a little bit about your backstory, you know, whether or not you were going to be successful didn't appear to be an option. It didn't appear you had a big safety net.
No. I just liked the work ethic and I always liked to back myself. And, you know, I'm a big one for the strengths and personality profile and stuff. And for those who know disc profiling, I'm a results orientated person. So I tend to see things pretty clearly where I'm at, where I need to go, and sometimes build the strategy on the run.
Oh, I can't wait to talk about your personal life to see how if your partner is the opposite.
Well, if my wife comes, if she brings out here somewhere, Roxy, I don't know what's going to go on.
Oh, look, why don't we jump straight into that conversation now?
Sure.
So you're crisp, clinical, results orientated.
Yeah.
And at work, and I'm assuming in your professional life.
Yeah.
But when you go home, is there a yin to your yang?
There is a yin to a yang. So my wife, Lisa, is a perfectionist. So she operates. So for those who know DISC, I'm high D, middle I, low S, and relatively low C. We're basically inverted on all of those besides the I. So we're not introverts or extroverts, so we can do things together or have our own alone time. But, yeah, it's definitely the opposite space. And the other, not fly in the ointment here, Roxy, too, but Lisa is our head of marketing here at Tribeca. So what I learned early days was the more I'm the boss at work, the less I'm the boss at home, mate. So less CEOing at work. We stick to our own lanes at work.
Oh, I've got this, you know, this is an engine room podcast, but I'm going to be a little tad indulgent. So my long-suffering wife, she had done a marketing and design course. And whilst we had young kids, she was head of marketing for my financial planning practice. And we're the exact opposite. So I probably sit more towards your profile, and my wife's very creative, and we cross over. Sometimes we have too many ideas, and when I sold my practice, she went off and changed careers, and everyone laughs, and she'd become a qualified psychologist. So, and everyone's like, "Well, that you deserve that, right?" So, but the good news is that, as it turns out, I was fearful, but there are far more dysfunctional people in the world than me. So it's worked out well. There's a silver lining in that grey cloud.
And to that point, we found a really good working rhythm. there, you know, Lisa's good at a lot of things and has built a good team around it. And I know what I'm good at. And, you know, I'm sure we'll go into it later. But with what we've built here at Tribeca, we play a lot more to people's strengths these days. So it works really well.
And is that because you profile everyone?
We do.
On the way in or?
Yeah, we profile everyone on the way in. You know, we talk to Tribe and we live Tribe at Tribeca. So when we're bringing someone in, we want them to understand what their strengths are and they can add an additional strength to our Tribe. And if they know what their strengths are and we've hired them to play to that, they're probably going to be a lot better at the role and be a lot more enjoyable in the work.
I really want to unpack that later on because your talent is hard to find. It's hard to keep. It's your biggest cost and it's your biggest upside. So I suppose digging deep into that is for those who are listening and are wondering about where to start, there might be a few sort of lessons from this podcast. And for those out there wondering, you know, if this resonates, you might be on the phone giving them a call here, right? So, we'll come back to a few life lessons on, because we have had a few practices where couples are in the business and they've managed to negotiate or navigate this by having clear swim lanes and all the rest of it. Now, have you got any kids?
Yeah, I've got one.
What do you tell your kids you do for a living?
Yeah, so Allegra knows I'm a financial advisor.
How old is Allegra?
16.
16, okay. She's old enough to know what a financial
advisor is. She's old enough, yeah. I met her when she was six.
Yeah.
So my wife's daughter, and she's coming to work with me in school holidays and stuff like that, but a bit busy for that these days, but yeah, she knows what I do.
Okay. And my kids didn't back then, so, and they're in their 20s, and I think they're starting to understand, so God love them, shout out, boys. Now, you worked in these businesses, so you got a bit of a feel for superannuation. You would have heard a fair bit, actually. A bit of a feel for investments, being in a master trust. Although you were administrating other people's investments, you would have got a pretty good look at all of the fund managers and the way in which they went about things. And in 2007, you decided to go into partnership or start your own firm. Yeah. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. So got an opportunity with someone that I worked with at that time to buy a financial advice business that was from a deceased estate. So slightly unconventional in the fact that I went off, started that business, and he stayed working, you know, where we were at OAMPS. So it was good. Got to go out and do that. You know, I think you highlighted earlier, Roxy, never been short on confidence or the will to want to go and do something.
And how did you get that opportunity?
Yeah.
Given that you weren't an active planner.
Yeah. So I was at OAMPS. So I was it.
But you're a salaried planner,
yeah,
there.
Exactly.
So you weren't buying it as part of OAMPS, no.
I reckon it must have been part of, like, from a business broker or something like that.
Right. Okay.
Like, to be more specific, it was Bendigo Bank and, like, their trustees or something. So they're handling an estate.
Okay.
Came into our field. But for those who've been around in financial advice long enough, Bob Neal and Nick Hilton valued that business for us.
There you go.
It's going back a time.
There you go.
20 years ago.
So that would have meant, I imagine, you had to borrow money.
Yeah, that's correct.
How old were you at the time?
Oh, it's easy because I'm born in 80, so 27.
Yep. So you're 27 years old. Did you have a house or anything?
Yeah, I had a house. I was quite fortunate.
Okay.
So I'd done that, like I said, decent with money. So had a house and had enough, I think, somewhat enough money. But I did remember I borrowed for, well, I reckon my sister and one of my aunts as well.
Yeah. Shout out, everyone.
Well, there's nothing, if people forget, right? There's nothing that keeps you more honest. Not going to keep you up at night, keeps you more honest than borrowing money from your family and paying them back.
Yeah, that's right.
We didn't start in an office of 432 square meters in Church Street in Hawthorne with 30 tribe members. You know, got to start somewhere. But yeah, shout out to those people who helped me.
But there you go. So yeah, and a shout out to every family member who has spotted one of our fellow brethren in financial advice. So that business sort of chugged along pretty well,
yeah,
and got to a reasonable turnover. But you then exited that business. Did you sell that business?
Yeah, I did. I actually set up. It ended up being three businesses at the same time. So the primary business that we went out and did. Then I set up a JV through a general insurance broker, so financial services. Knew a bit about that given the background in OAMPS. And that was simply through reaching out to a number of people, didn't know them, but built that relationship.
And was it regional or was it Melbourne-based?
No, it was Melbourne-based. Yeah, it was Melbourne-based. And then the other one was kind of like a solid partnership where we went and invested in a business as well. So it's kind of got to a point, grew really quickly over 3 or 4 years, and there wasn't any great plan. It was, you know, grow, scale, and help more people and build relationships. Everyone knows what you're like in your late 20s. And then it got to a point, yeah, in the 30s, sold out of those.
And all the while along, did you go back to Deakin and do your diploma? And I think I did my diploma of finance planning at Deakin from memory.
No, I did the eight subjects, the grad dip at Securities Institute, which turned into Finzia.
Right.
That was the thing. Yeah. So completed that.
Okay. Very good. Very good. And, you know, apart from running your own business and later on, you've lent a lot into, you know, putting back into the community through things like advisory boards, working with the old AFA and their investment funds board members. So you're not scared of putting back in.
No. It's always those phone calls you get, Roxy. You know, can you help out? Would you mind doing that? Yes. Happy to do.
Yeah, there you go. So, it's just, I suppose, give a busy person a job, right? That's I suppose, the theory. Mm. But you're now 15 years into financial planning. But when you were growing up, did your family have financial planning in their life at all?
No, not at all. So I grew up in a household, single mother, had a good, decent job at Deakin University, but money was, you know, somewhat tight. So didn't want for anything, but didn't grow up with a lot of money either. Yeah, there wasn't a lot of money talk or anything in the house. So went to a good school, as did my sister, had holidays and the like as well. But no, it wasn't, I wouldn't say it was affluent, or we didn't have financial advice in our lives.
And I'm here in Hawthorne, which is one of the more sort of affluent areas in metro Melbourne. When did you make the move out sort of to this suburb?
Yeah, 2011. So I bought a place, house in Hawthorne, 2011. So after I got businesses up and running, did that, which is good. Not really sure, might sound silly, Roxy, not really sure how I ended up in this part of the world, but seemed to work well, and just used to the local area these days, which is good. But the funny thing is that the 30 tribe members at Tribeca, there's not one that grew up around here.
Interesting.
It is.
Maybe interesting.
We'll unpack later. But yeah, not one of them grew up around here, and basically none of them went to private school. Clearly, well, my stepdaughter goes to private, so I'm not anti. I'm not there positive or negative. But interesting. We've all ended up here.
I've got a bit of a saying in life: be inspirational to aspirational people. And what you've collected is aspirational people who but you have to be the leader, right? So when you kicked off Tribeca, did you buy a business, or was that day one, client one?
Yeah, no. So bought multiple businesses, if that makes sense. So really, what they were clients.
Yep.
Needed a home. You know, this business, Tribeca, started out at 236 Williams Road, Toorak. At the time, so it was a front room rented house with filing cabinets. So I did about 12 months there.
But it was all tax deductible if you're listening from the ATA. That's right.
They're always listening.
They're always
listening. So it grew that way. So from day one, didn't really have the centers of influence or accounting relationships. I was used to kind of in-house or JV stuff. But really, I wanted to get some momentum quickly. And I wanted to grow a business, and you know, there was certainly a fire in the belly around what I thought financial planning should be. Far more.
What was it? What did you think when you first started Tribeca?
It should be client centric. Yep. I still think an advisor should be able to go into a room with a client, demonstrate some vulnerability, go below the line is what we taught, so that the emotional or spiritual piece, high EQ, and help the clients understand in a busy life what they really want. You know, without judgment, if we go to uni or we get a trade or we start life and then we might get married and we have kids and the like as well, how much is planned and how much is not? So again, without judgment, we want our clients to make informed decisions, and you know, our brand promises around My Good Life. We want people to more have a life by design. My judgment at the time of the profession or industry was it was a lot of products and the like, and the banks were involved. It was about some superficial goals in order to sell a product. How do we get back to people? And I reckon that it could be really positive for the three stakeholders: the client, the team, or tribe member. And you can run a highly profitable business because I reckon that's what your clients
try winning ways to call it.
Yeah,
if every decision you can do that, absolutely. Yeah. And you touched on, I suppose the rationale for why I got involved in Ensemble was that the guiding voices 15, 20 years ago were all product providers.
Yeah.
The more you listen to them, the further away you got from the client in some respects. But when we talk about, you know, you've just mentioned there My Good Life, which is front and center on your website, just the way in which the language that you use to engage the client, I'll just use some, right? So, well, we're more than just financial advisors. We're fathers, mothers, sisters, brothers, grandparents, friends, and individuals. We believe in living life to the full and do our best to empower our clients to do the same. We share common values like respect, empathy, and honesty, and we want to help you live your good life. This is who we are. So you've just written a love letter to your ideal client.
Mm.
Yep. You've given a sense of vulnerability. You've basically written that love letter, but, you know, just to change gears, who is your ideal client? Who are you writing this love letter to?
Yeah, it's a good question, Roxy. You know, for us, again, we're slightly different. You know, we've got a purpose that's centered around being brave and screw the status quo, and that just feeds into our business. So the people we want to work with, our clients, first of all, it's a qualitative lens. So they want to be inspired, educated, supported, taking on a journey. They know that they'll have to do some of the metaphorical heavy lifting. It's not today. It's not tomorrow. It's not Bitcoin. It's not the next investment property. They are good people who are grounded in their own values, and they know who they are. And there's a real strong strain of modesty that runs through them. We've all got an ego, but theirs is minimal. They're good people. They know what's important to them. Their family, friends, holidays, hobbies, and experiences. They're not so much worried about the external motivators. And if they've been on that track, they want to get back to what's really important to them.
So what's interesting is the criteria that you've just outlined there. So good people, modesty, family, friends. I had to do the acronym really quickly. Yep. Family, friends, hobbies, and beliefs. I can't remember.
Family, friends, holidays, hobbies, and experiences.
That's it. Experiences.
Yeah.
I dropped the E. You could be describing your team, or you could be describing your clients. That's the really interesting, mirror to hold up here.
Well, it is. And we invest and spend a lot of time on our leaders in the business as well. We use the same lens. Are we inspiring, educating, supporting our team? So it very much transfers to them and then through them to the clients that we serve.
How do you know if your client, you've gone out there and you've said something, they need to be good people, they need to have modesty.
Yeah.
Answer it. I suppose I'm going to ask the question in two ways. How do you judge that? And also, how do you sort of seek out red flags, and what do you do?
Yeah, it's a good question. So some of the filtering, Roxy, said it around, you know, the work that we've put into the brand and who we are. So we know who we are. We've got the narrative around that, and we continue to talk to that. And we continue to try and be really brave in terms of, we talk to the financial wellbeing piece, which I know we'll get into later. Be really clear, we are different. So therefore, we talk different, and we want to appeal to people in a different way. We don't just want to be slightly offset. We want to be completely different, because as you and I touched on off air earlier, there's so many people in Australia aren't getting advice, and we think that there is a significant cohort of them that should be getting advice from people like us and Tribeca.
And the word tribe, the reason you called it Tribeca was nothing to do with tribe, but you very quickly sort of embrace this terminology, tribe. Now, was this something, what was the evolution of that sort of lexicon?
Very early days, you know, we all know how important culture is. So like 8 times more important than strategy. So therefore, it comes down to the people we hire, the people we nurture, and then they come to multiply the next people that come into the business as well. So understanding how important people are, and if we think about back to the analogy of a tribe, you have a cohort of different people, but they all have individual strengths and they respect each other and they're stronger together. And that's the key for us at Tribeca. We don't want robots, we don't want machines, and we don't want people to wear masks. And it does go back to a bit of your question, Roxy, around our advice. We, you know, talked before, you know, we're vulnerable, we're human. We often talk about, without being crude, we're just in the people business. We do advice. That's why we work with a lot of other professionals that are the same. But just be a real person, and I will pinch this from Ben Crow, it's the imperfection that creates the connection. If we're wearing a mask or, you know, doesn't matter, but a significantly tailored suit or whatever, we're hiding behind something, clients can't let their guard down. They can't attach themselves. They can't build long-term trusted relationships and find, for want of a better term, their true north. So we've got to be who we are, then that translates to our clients as well.
And you know, the way in which you articulate your team members on your website, tribecafinancial.com.au, everyone, words such as experience seeker, adventurous, green thumb, you put you down as disruptor, or maybe that's written by other people.
No, I don't know.
I think it was disrupting, and they've arrived at compromise. So you've tried to, clearly put the emotional limbic kind of terminology for people straight up. So you've given us an idea of the types of clients that or the types of people that you want. But what do they look like from a typical financial planning? Are they, what are their age? What are they, you know, what sort of industries are they in typically?
Yeah. So if we look at, you know, because we talked about the qualitative side, and there's obviously got to be a quantitative side. You know, traditionally, they're late 40s, early 50s, leading up to even in their 60s as well. There was a time, you know, probably 5 or 6 years ago, Roxy, where we really looked to, we've got somewhat of a young average age of advisor, you know.
What would it be?
Good question. I reckon it'd be average would be around mid to late 30s.
I mean, that's 10 years younger than the average in the industry.
Before, you know, pre-COVID, we went down a lot more of the cash flow advice route and appealing. But there wasn't a lot of longevity in that because when things got tighter, they got hard, we found that, you know, clients were flighty. However, we found that as there was more of a burning imperative or people were later in life, we talked about private school, you know, maybe there's a private school fee that dropped off. Or unfortunately, midlife, you might lose a really good friend.
Yep.
And then life gets real. So people go, okay, I want to get off this treadmill. What do I really want to do? It doesn't mean stop work. That's the point around the age. So we really find not there's a lack of maturity earlier, but they know who they are. They know what they want. You know, really importantly, Roxy, they know what they don't want. They're kind of sick of the mask, sick of the corporate job, maybe sick of the 5 days a week. Like, okay, I just want to be true to myself, or there's enough pain here, I want it to change, or there's enough inspiration where I want it, and I'm not good with money, and I want to go, I want to go, so I'm going to talk about it.
So that's the outcome of being a client, but the process. So you've just mentioned, you know, they know what they want to do, they know what they don't want to do.
Yeah.
But a couple comes in here, and they've been referred to you guys as financial planners. How do you tease that out? How do you do effectively, a social science under the guise of finance? Like, how do you get to that point? Because that's the magic with the clients.
Yeah.
Are there any sort of techniques that you use? Do you train your team? I'd love to hear that very front bit. Because people might want that as an outcome, but they don't come in here like that. They come in nervous.
Yep. Yeah. So it's a great question. And it really starts with who we hire. And over 15 years, we haven't always hired right or hired for the purpose. That's no reflection of if it hasn't worked out. So for us, for Roxy, in a culture and a business, understanding who we really are, like a purpose to be brave, screw the status quo and live a good life. We need tribe members who are passionate about that, and that's lived. How we help our tribe do that are things like we work a 4-day work week. Everyone gets Wednesday off. And being of a younger average advisor age, we've got 6 new parents here. So we've got people, they're Wednesdays, who don't have to do daycare, or they might have better relationships with their kids. They're defining and they're leading their good life. So you got that.
So can I just, I'm going to ask for details because you've got a lot here, a lot. So your business, your employment agreements are 4 days a week, but people work long hours, right, to try and get jobs done. So, and that's Wednesday is the mandated day. So I come in here on Wednesday and it's like the coffee shop back in 10 hours.
Yeah. There's no one here. So, and it's important.
Holy shit. That's interesting. And do you take the day off?
Yeah.
You
lead by example.
Yeah. I'm just saying, well, that's wonderful. So you can do, I mean, your daughter is older now, but effectively you guys had that flexibility. When did you start implementing?
So we started this during COVID and we weren't ready. To do it, we did a 3-month trial.
It was pretty easy to get them stay at home in Hawthorne, mate.
Yeah, it's not bad, right? People are everywhere, but we weren't ready. But we concluded that we're never going to be ready. And we could say, oh, it's during COVID, or it's this, or it's bad. But I was really passionate about it. I'd read a lot of research, you know, from Scandinavia and the like, and it didn't seem to be a lot of downside. And I'm sure you're probably familiar with this, Roxy, but this Parkinson's law, where people extend the work to fit the time.
It's like a gas and a vessel.
Yeah. So I was really passionate about, so for us here, yes, we have a 37 and a half hour work week, but we don't clock watch. We work. So it's what it's designed to do is challenge ourselves around how can we be more effective in our work craft, be far more value focused as opposed to time focused with our clients, and give it a go. If it was an absolute balls up, we could just go back to the way it was. So there was no guarantees. We were really careful, Roxy, in that narrative that if this doesn't work, we reserve the right.
Yeah, I can
work there. So you asked back to your question was around how do we do the EQ, or how do we get with clock? We hire the right people and we do a lot of training. So in terms of our value proposition, how it's been structured, you know, you only build confidence through competence. You only get competence through training. So put a lot of work into our team and our structures around how do we give advice at Tribeca? So there's a fluidity in that. There's structure in terms of how we deliver advice. Nothing's scripted because they've got to bring themselves to the meeting.
Well, let's talk the structure because, you know, when I like to paint the picture of a practice, and, you know, especially now that you're doing it with 20% less face time than most practices, what is your org structure and why did you choose? Well, what's your org structure and what's the advice delivery sort of structure that you can have as a common denominator that allows you to overlay the emotional and qualitative aspects?
Well, we know with what we're building, it's leadership. It's really important to have the right leadership in place. So we've gone and made investment around our COO. She was a GM. She joined us. She's ex-KPMG consultant because we don't want to build a traditional financial planning practice. So I couldn't just go and hire an external practice manager. Didn't want to. So we're fortunate we have her. We've also got ex-head of our client experience team. She is now our practice manager, Kirsten. That works really well. So we're now looking 1, 3, and 5 years ahead in terms of that structure. So we've got people who are off the tools, who know enough about advice, but in terms of what we need to build the business. And then we've also got our head of advice, Rob Devlin, who runs our advice team. But more the nuts and bolts of how we do it, you know, we work on the diamond team structure. So having a lead advisor, a senior advisor, an advisor, a CX, and an associate advisor as well. Because we're big here at Tribeca, in terms of our brand and how we deliver advice, we know we've got to grow a lot of the professionals. Yeah, as opposed to hiring externally over the next 5 years. It doesn't mean that we don't love hiring externally, but we know and we're really passionate. And our leadership key responsibility here is we're people growers, and that's what we do here. So we've got to have a structure with which to do that.
Well, if I put my quasi CFO hat on, I'm going to ask you some dry questions.
Yeah.
So the diamond structure, each team, you've mentioned, you know, so the reasons for diamond is you've got the lead with the you call them CX, I've noticed. Is that right?
Yep.
Nice. And they're looking after a cohort of retained clients, and there's an ambition for them to take a bunch of net new clients on a year. What would a typical diamond look like in your business as far as number of retained clients?
Number of retained clients. Yeah, it's good. We've just reevaluated this in terms of the business. So where we are now, it's about 300 clients
per team. Yeah,
but within 3 years it'll be about 450.
Okay, so we start with the 300 and we're getting to the 450. So you've got 300 clients that are on retainers. And do you do annual contracts or opt-in or what's
okay? Yeah, so we do. We work on the opt-in.
Yeah, so you've got 300 there, and then what's the expectation of net new growth for a diamond team?
Yeah, so we work on. It's interesting because we look at things.
Because you've just said 50 per year then over 3 years to go from 300 to
500. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's where it sits.
Yeah, one a week.
Yeah.
So four new clients a month would be a goal.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. I'm in a team with you and I'm the, for a better word, I'm the next in line to be the lead advisor. Yeah. And how do I get my own, like, how do you reallocate clients? So if I go out there and start with client one, well, that's a pretty expensive exercise for you. Yeah. So, yeah, how do you do it? How do you develop the next diamond? How many of those teams do you have, by the way?
Yeah, so we have four.
Yeah, so you got four. And so the fifth one's coming up. You've obviously, as a leadership team, and what's the name of the chap who's head of advice, Kip?
Rob.
Yep. So Rob's in your ear going, this guy or girl should be next up to the mound. I'm going to use baseball talk now. Yeah. And you're probably sitting there, that's great, but like where are we getting the clients from? Are we allocating some clients? Or what's the strategy for that next step? Is if I'm coming in to, and if I'm liking what I'm hearing here and I want to start somewhere in the diamond that's not the lead, I want to know that there's a real sort of pathway.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's what we're genuinely all about. So all of our client appointments are two up. So there's always an associate as well as an advisor in the appointment.
And co-pilot.
That's right.
Yeah, that's co-pilot. Exactly
right. So, but why that's so important is if you look at the promotion model within our business from associate advisor to senior, and then the senior goes out and builds up their own diamond team.
Yep.
So what we love about that is that allows for promotion.
Yep.
But it's also, that means that when we need to create capacity at each advisor level, the client is handed down to someone that they already know.
Yep.
So if we work this through, right, we've got a senior advisor who looks after 120 or 140 clients. They need to go and be a lead advisor. They might divest 30 or 40 of their clients to someone in the existing diamond team.
Yeah.
They go out and they start their own diamond team, not fully fledged.
Yep.
And they go out and build it from there.
And then the way in which it internally works here with your COO and yeah. CFO is that...
And they're much better at all this than I am.
Yeah, no, I get it. But then things like judging their, you know, what they've done as far as their job description, but also things like their short-term incentive, long-term incentive potential. We'll talk about later about potentially equity in the business, yeah. That kind of thing. But there needs to be that clear path because it's super competitive to bring talent in, right?
Absolutely.
And by the sounds of it, you've never brought in a lead advisor. You grow them all, is that right?
We've grown them to date, yeah. So that's it. So last year we did make a business acquisition. So with that came a senior advisor.
Yep. Did you get one diamond out of that?
No. So what are we, I'm just thinking. So it was a senior advisor and client experience person.
Yep.
And that client experience person, she's that good. She's now a head of client experience.
Right.
Which is great. So we kind of... You know, a couple of really good tribe members. But yeah, mostly it's internal promotion.
The client type are time poor people. Mm. I'm in your office here. It's full. It was full at 9 o'clock when I got here. What's the ratio of team members who work in the office versus not in the office?
Yeah.
And second question, clients.
Yeah.
Who come to the office versus...
So on average, we'd have our tribe members. Nothing's mandated. People, when they join us, they know the way we work. And being a business that wants to grow people, it's done a lot easier in person. That's only our opinion. So the four-day work week, 3 days people would be in of their own choosing. That's basically the way it works in terms of contact hours or people in here. In terms of client appointments, it's like I don't have the exact data at Roxy or that, but it's probably 50-50.
You know, is it trending any which way?
It's a good question. I don't know, to be honest. What I do know is that when we're engaging a client, and we've got an office on purpose, obviously, we love to meet with people, a new client in person, either for a discovery.
I would. I mean, the office is good. Sell itself. Good, great vibe. Big sort of goals wall up there. Is it client or team member experience? Yeah,
so,
the wall?
So the wall is, it's about our clients living their good life.
Yeah.
So again, our clients become example for other clients about what's possible. It provides a really good discussion point. The only problem having clients in the office, Roxy, with the table tennis table, if you get a client that's a cracker and then beats their advisor on table tennis, we hear about it for days.
If the client wins, oh, mate, I'd be treating every client like Kim Jong-il. I'd be never winning. Like, you know, the client's always right when it comes to that. So
I love it. So, so whether it's a discovery appointment or what we call it, my good life appointment or an SOA, we love to meet with them in person, seeing him in 3D, pressing the flesh. Yeah.
And so you've got clients on opt-ins. What's the sort of the range of annual fees that you charge for a couple?
Yeah. So our fees for both upfront advice and ongoing start at 6,000 plus GST.
Yep.
And we're a business that's slightly different. I think that if you come on as an upfront client, you don't have to be an ongoing client.
So how does that work?
Yeah. So we've built a business that's profitable based on both.
Yep.
And we don't need something like Best Interest to tell us what should be right for the client. So some, you know, 4 out of every 5 clients will come on as an ongoing client, or we recommend that. But, you know, the 1 in 5, maybe they just need some clarification, a fix up, something.
Yeah.
Set and forget.
And you just put them on a nurture program.
Yeah. Is that right? We're here.
Yeah.
We're happy to help. So they need this now. And then there's a few things they need to go away and work on, and then they can come back.
So you've got, when I look at your organizational structure, you've put the right people in the right role. And it sounds also like you're building for capacity. So you've got 27 people here in this business. Do you have an outsourced or any outsourced or contractors that assist you paraplanning?
So we do paraplanning in-house.
Yep.
We're quite fortunate. We've got two people who are really good at that.
Yeah.
And one wears two hats. He's an associate at the same time. So he has to think about studies PY.
Yep.
And then we work with 4 people overseas.
Yep.
Through a structured outsource provider, not direct. They're really good at what they do. So they do that work with us. But it is a shout out to our practice manager, Kirsten. You get out what you put in, right? So the amount of work and time she's put in with them over the last 3 years, the first two, and then we've just employed another 2 as well. So they are great. And the amount of volunteer effort is fantastic.
Yeah. And look, I'm not late to that party.
Yes.
I've had people doing that.
Reason they're converted, aren't I?
For many, many years. And Kirsten, is it Kirsten?
Yeah. Yes.
So Kirsten, if you think, and I've said this many times, I'm just giving people heads up. If you think you can just get someone outsourced and plug them into your business without giving them any of the culture, then you're not going to win. Exactly. And you're probably going to be one of those people saying it doesn't work. But if you do put in, you'll get great returns in the same way that, guess what, people are people.
Yep.
In the same way you get them here, right?
So, exactly.
how do you measure? How do you measure operational success? So, you know, it's pretty easy to measure sort of front of house and advisors and new clients. And, you know, I've got five new clients and I've charged 6,600 times five. And that's quite easy. But what about operations? Like, how do you measure the number of like reviews and SLAs and everything?
Yeah, it's a really good question again, Roxy. We love data here. We love data. So one of the ways when we're onboarding or people are the prospective clients are coming into Tribeca, we're big on HubSpot. So invested in that. So the amount of data, understand conversions, prospects, where people are in deal pipeline, that really works well for us. And then we use WorkSorted. So in terms of our CRM, we're heavy on the data. And that's why, you know, having the leadership that we do, and particularly our Kirsten, our practice manager, you know, on a monthly basis, she goes through all of the data. We get the reports. We understand new engagements, disengagements, average fees. She even plans out 12 months in advance like she has for 2026, upcoming, ongoing, you know, client reviews or annual planning appointments. Because you would have seen this in advice as well, Roxy, just trying to smooth off those months, you know, where there's big work or there's little work. And you can imagine in a scaling business, the more we can smooth those edges, it just makes it easy for the tribe to work.
Scaling's hard financially because you everyone's full of ideas and you get indigestion and you've, you know, as I've got wiser, as I've got older, it's not just about how much you can make, but it's just eliminating those really small errors that add up.
Yeah. Sure, maybe you were the same, but, you know, for us, January and July, traditionally lighter months, you understand Christmas holidays, and then if people when you're wherever else in July, but the ability to be malleable in terms of when you have those ongoing client appointments and things like that. I think we can continue to work a lot smarter around that.
Oh, I think we just, I just caught it as it was. There's only 11 months in a year.
Yeah.
Yeah, no matter which way you want to do it.
It's from 10.
Well, there's 12 months of costs and only 11 months of revenue.
Yeah.
And that's whatever that is, 8%. And sometimes it's probably more than that because we do enjoy quite a few public holidays. And so some months are, I think April's normally feels like a month, but it's not. Yeah. Now you mentioned a bit of your tech. How do you what financial planning advice prep software do you
use? So we use Xplan.
Yep.
So Xtools Plus. Wow. WealthSolver Risk Researcher.
Yep.
We have a template from Practice Dynamics.
Yep. And so by using Risk Researcher, answer my next question. You do a lot of in-house life insurance.
Yeah. So holistic advice.
Yep.
So you know you go through the goals based workings that we do with our new clients, turn them into smart goals, break them down into cash flow, investing inside outside super,
yeah,
and then a contingency planning piece. So obviously need prepare personal risk insurance, but also have the estate planning conversation, then refer out. So we're really passionate about the holistic piece.
When I talk about risk management, and you mentioned something a bit earlier on having outsourced providers and you said you were going through an organization. What's your advice to people who are not doing that from a risk management perspective? Because I have my two cents worth, but
yeah,
I'd love to hear yours.
Yeah. So like anything in life, you know, you do your research and you work out, you find people that you trust, the people that we've decided to work with, we trust explicitly, work through that. They're experts at what they do. To be honest, I don't humbly, you know, Roxy, I don't get scared about many things, but outsourcing direct scares the shit out of me, mate, to be honest.
Well, whoever you're using, and I'm on the record saying I'm agnostic. Obviously, I've got a background, but I'm agnostic. But as long as they're looking after their people, they've got to have data security.
Yeah,
they've got to have cyber security. They've got to have, they've got to have all of those things, or you won't sleep at night.
Yeah.
And it's part of my little crusade that I don't care who you use, as long as you don't. We don't need to be on. Do we even have Today Tonight anymore in Australia? I can't remember. We don't need to be in the news where we've lost someone's data, right? We're just recovering from that.
It just takes one mistake, doesn't it? And for the, you know, I understand that people are probably trying to save money in terms of the salary, but you look at risk reward, it doesn't make a lot of sense.
Yeah, no, it's stupid.
Yeah.
Yeah, 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 absolutely. So do you have you've got employee shares, is that right? Do you have an advisory board or board at all?
Yeah, so we have a board in place. Yep. So for those listening, probably familiar, a lot of people will be familiar with Brad Fox, ex-CEO of what was known as the AFA. Brad and I became good mates during an AFA conference, as you do, Roxy, in 2007, stayed in touch. We were both business owners, and then when he went on his journey to be the CEO, I bought part of his financial advice business. We always stayed in contact, and then when he left there,
he came on to Tribeca as a shareholder and as our chairman. So we're quite fortunate around that.
And how often do you meet?
Quarterly.
Okay, so you're doing quarterly, and that's how often you do your strategic planning?
Yeah, so.
Because I know Brad, right? He wouldn't be able to like help himself but lean in on the strat planning.
Well, it's interesting because not talk too much out of school here, but, you know, this has been a good challenge for Brad because we've moved to the EOS operating system, so the entrepreneurial operating system, right? So you work on annual goals, quarterly rocks. The quarterly rocks are driven by the leadership in the day-to-day. Yeah, so this has been an evolution for our business.
Look, that model, I use the Rockefeller habit scaling up, same thing, right? And you had the daily huddles and meeting rhythms and quarterly rocks and all the rest of it. In fact, I'm catching up with another practice and they're doing they do everything, but they do rocks three times a year because they have to give themselves a break for compliance. The other aspect of the operating system here is, when you actually get down to the nitty gritty of doing the life insurance and the investment, you're self-licensed, is that right?
Yeah.
Okay. Have you done any work on things like SMAs or MDAs or making life easier for you?
Yeah. So, and this is where, you know, we're quite different. So up until 5 or 6 years ago, you know, we did more active investment management in the business, I should say. But going back and testing, it didn't make a lot of sense, particularly with our value proposition being so people-centric and wanting to get below the line and the EQ piece. So we made the active switch at the time. We're now proud we're an index business. So we do a lot of work, obviously, with Vanguard. Our value, as we see it, is in the risk profiling, people understanding the risk they take, potential returns. We're still good at the investing side, but we've not done, and we don't do any work around NDA, SMA. It's just not part of our value proposition.
Given the age demographic of your target client, what's the percentage that are actually retired and living off their
I reckon it would sit at about 35%. Yeah.
Okay, so that's higher than what I would have done. And are you getting any intergenerational clients?
We are. And then a shout out to an advisor that's recently rejoined us, our first alumni to come back, so Rach Holder. We're really pushing into the intergenerational space around this. So
how are you doing that?
Well, she does come from a psychology background, right? Yep. So how are we doing it? I reckon, Roxy, this is a bit of my bandwagon. You talked before about outsourcing. So I reckon in professional services, people often miss the opportunity that sits under their nose. The opportunity, I think, for financial advisors is the network of their existing clients. So for us at the moment, one in four clients refers. By the end of the year, it'll be one in one. How are we going to do that? Learn what it takes for a client to be a raving advocate of your advice business. Learn that and then continue to build your client experience to that. Then introducing and normalizing clients the fact that this is, if when you're happy, you're seeing the value, this is how you can help us build our business. So I think more of the problem sits with the advisors around asking for referrals. Not asking for referrals, it's positioning the right way. And if people are happy, it can be done really well. So that leads directly into the intergen stuff, because when we look at our ideal client, family, friends, holidays, hobbies, and experiences, they want to help the people that are most important to them. This is how we do the intergenerational piece.
You bang on, and people have, for the last 10 years, people have been quite compliance trained, which is necessary, but it's not the be all and end all. I would hazard a guess that the best way to figure out the client's most valued people in their life is to do a family tree. However, normally that gets offloaded to the very dry estate planning lawyer who's, doing a family tree and the interaction between them is a fantastic tool. I speak with practices all the time, and many practices have the inverse of you. They've got 70% of their clients that are retired, and some of them even have average ages in the 80s. And they're sort of grappling with, how do I get the next generation of clients? And I said to one recently, I said, do you have a list of all the power of attorneys and power of guardians? Which kid is getting the money? I mean, you've got these billions of dollars right now in an aging business. Yep. And is that some of the levers that you're using?
Yeah. And going back to where we always start, Roxy, before any client appointment, you already exist, who's the client and what do they want from this? So literally every appointment we do, we work on slides and we work on structure, but if it's not the first or second slide, but the second slide, what does the client want to get out of today? Mate, you would understand the power of a question and then just freaking listening. Just listening and silence and you can understand what's really going on in their life, and they'll tell you. They'll tell you who's important. They'll tell you what's troubling them. We'll do the planning. We'll do the compliance. We'll do the joint. That's what we all do. We know that. But when you ask the question, sit, pause, and listen, you'll find out what's really important to them. You'll have a great conversation. I love the thing as well, two ears, one mouth.
That's it. I used to be a nightmare. I'd get the clients at the end of the presentation of their plan to get up on the whiteboard and sell it to me.
Yeah.
And I'd give them all of the normal kind of feedback a typical client would give, and they'd be shooting down my objections as if they're me.
Yeah.
And it would be a bit of fun, right? But it did the job. Yeah. So you mentioned you've got employees that are part of your team as far as shareholding. How long have you been doing that for?
Yeah, so we've had a partnership model for 5 years here at Tribeca.
Yep.
And then what we launched 7-8 months ago was our employee share ownership plan.
Also,
really passionate about this, and this is something I've, you know, evolved over the years, Roxy, around. I want people to be better than they ever thought they could be, both personally and professionally. I love this one, this consistent improvement. I call it happy but not content. That makes sense. And I want people to want that in the drive. And what I'm really passionate about, despite the fact, you know, we bank obviously with NAB having done some acquisitions, I'm really passionate about the Tribeca road, and I want our tribe to be really great, and I want them to outperform, and I want them to be rewarded for that capital. So that's what we've done at Tribeca. We launched the scheme last year. A lot of the information is proprietary, but what I'm happy to highlight today is basically the reward is based on outperformance, personal exertion.
So, and it's open to everyone, not just advisors.
Exactly. Yep. Oh, the whole tribe.
Yep.
And it's not a buy-in structure.
Okay.
It is we all outperform together.
Yep.
We all get rewarded together.
Yep. Yep. So, and do you sort of, that's been in, so does that mean you share your financials with your team?
Yeah, absolutely. And even with the CRM and stuff we use, we're transparent around that as well. So, yep, absolutely.
How do you manage in a growth business to not blow up your cash flow?
Yeah, it's a really good question. So we've started, you know, 15 years in, we only started paying dividends probably 18 months ago. I always just paid down debt. I just did a principal and obviously pay the interest. So we've got a really strong balance sheet, which is a place to start. And then we're quite, you know, we talked before about advisors are bringing on a number of clients. I wouldn't say aggressive, but, you know, we really want to outperform in terms of helping new clients and what those income.
And clients want their investment advisors to run good quality businesses.
Exactly right. And we recognize the value of new business income, but also AOR. It's the wrong terminology, Crooksy, but it's almost the compound interest for financial advisors. You know, you're really client-centric, you demonstrate qualitative and quantitative value, you're really strong on the value you provide to clients. Like for those listening out there, if you haven't had a look at the Russell Investment Research each year on advice value, please do it. We've built our fee structure, everything off the back of it. So it gives your tribe the confidence to understand the value only in a quantitative sense you're providing, continue to reiterate the qualitative side, so you're charging the right amount. And the client's getting a great service.
Yep, yep. And you've got, by involving people, the more people that get a share of the game,
yep,
the more they're going to have a lens on making sure that things are done efficiently and pushing towards some dividends.
The volunteer effort goes through. It's like there's a switch in the brain going from employee to self-employed. Their interest, their want to get things better. I summarize it as volunteer effort. They grow another leg.
You've seen it.
We're seeing it.
And they can talk with business owners and say, look, I'm invested in the business as well. So it's
and clients like the continuity.
Yeah. What's your what's sort of the tenure of your team members?
Yeah. So Tash, our COO, would have that, but you know, we'd be 4 or 5 years as an average, I would say.
Yep. And then it'd be, as time goes on and more people jump into, what do you call it, the professional, what's the equity program called?
Oh, the partnership
program. The partnership. Yeah. As more and more people are invited to and participate in the partnership program, it'd be interesting to ask that question in 3 or 4 years to see how that has increased the tenure. Because, and what's interesting, and here's a question, and I we can edit it out if you don't want me to do it. Have you ever offered someone to go on the partnership program and they've said no?
Yeah. You don't have to edit it out. That's fine. I wouldn't mind either way. No, we haven't. But it's interesting, a couple of years ago when we were talking about it again, openly, we do a town hall with our tribe every month. Interesting, it's a tribe member that's no longer here, but her reaction was, why would I want to do that? Why would I want to take that risk?
really interesting in terms of, I didn't have the heart to say to her, Roxy, but
you got a house?
How big's your mortgage? But my point around that is people see things and risk in different ways.
Yeah.
So there might be a time where people don't, but with our growth plans, so we run quarterly growth plans and they're really around alignment, short, medium and long term. So similar to the goals we build with our clients, we will be having conversations and should know well ahead of time whether people are interested or not, because that goes back to affordability. We call it like a runway.
Yeah.
So they're on a runway.
Yep.
Because people aren't going to be able to come up with the money in 3 to 6 months.
So you've sold me on the culture. You're 45. Yeah. You're young. You've got 10 years in you at least, or whatever.
Yeah.
I'm in. I'm getting some shares. I may at some stage want to buy, like actually buy them, although at the moment you've got them as an earn in. What's the vision? What's the business look like in 5 years?
Yeah. So at the moment, you know, we serve 1,150 families, mm-hmm. and we're big for good to great. So we love the Jim Collins piece. We want to grow to serve 5,000 families.
Okay.
We got 18 quarters. We need to win a grand final every quarter.
Well, what is it? 5,000 at $6,000 average fees, a $30 to $40 million turnover business. Yeah. Which I've been doing this for a while, which sort of kicks out a profit level that whoever is listening knows, times multiple that everyone knows, which means that's a significant business for someone who aspirationally might be getting a percent or two or something along those lines of this business. That pays your home loan off.
Yeah, exactly. And that's...
So don't worry about having a home loan. Focus on how to get it paid off.
Well, exactly. And, you know, we've done some modeling through the ESOP as well, and where we think people should get, all things being considered, you know, around 5,000 families, it would pay off half of the average mortgage, which would be pretty good. And to the point around, you know, for those listening, they might see, you know, 5,000 families, or you've talked about turnover, maybe grandiose, somewhat egotistical. I continue to say it because therefore I'm accountable for it and I can't step away from it. This is the journey.
It's on the tin.
Be single-minded.
Yeah.
And if we end up at 4,800 or 5,200, but I don't want to leave there's no stone unturned. This is where we are going.
Yeah, and so a question I've got is, you're proudly Melbourne-based. Is that all going to be in Melbourne?
No, it's not all going to be in Melbourne. We've actually got a Sydney part of it. So hey, shout out Peter Higgins in Sydney.
Sorry, Peter.
He's a high...
I'm around the corner, mate.
He's a high I too. He's an extrovert. He can't, you know, he'll love it. Okay. So shout out to him.
So 75 Pitt Street. I've got a bar. Calm down.
Love it. So we often get asked this, Roxy, how we grow and expand across, say, the Australian footprint is based on the talent. So Peter came into our life through Rach, who works with us. We had conversations and it was right place, right time. Hawthorn will always be the heart to produce a lot of the advice.
Yep.
But I've said, you know, if it's Catherine or Kalgoorlie or Broome or Darwin, if there's the talent out there, client-centric, and they want to go on a journey, and obviously this is not an advert, but if they're thinking about the talent's right, the business model we run.
Yeah, that's the people strategy, execution and cash, right? So, and getting the people right seems to be a big part of it. I'm just going to quickly go back to and hyper-focus on how do you recruit people?
Yeah, it's quite good. If Tash was here and she was being really honest, she'd say she pushes me out of the way and doesn't let me get really involved that well. So, but how do we do it? We've got really crystal clear on what our culture is and the people that work really well at Tribeca. And Tash has headed that as well. She's looked at what worked, what didn't. She's been with us 5.5, 6 years now.
Yep.
So it's real understanding who we are, really defining the role and what strengths do we need when someone's coming in. So if there's any recruiters listening, I'm sorry, but we've really evolved away from that strategy.
Yeah.
And we've got using direct networks, particularly people that our tribe already knows.
Yep.
But also a lot of LinkedIn as well. There's LinkedIn functions around that. But this is without a word of a lie, Roxy. So we're running a high performance day with our tribe a couple of weeks ago, full day. It was facilitated by Brian Fitzpatrick, who's my leadership coach. And we had a guy knock on the door with his resume who wanted to come and work with us. So that doesn't happen every day. It's the first time it's happened in 15 years. But there is a real, what we are aiming to do with Tribeca through brand and the way, you know, we explain, express ourselves is to be a place that's desirous and people want to come and work. And there's heaps of opportunity because from my experience, when we interview, people are looking to leave because they've been promised the world and delivered an atlas. Us to give you around growth plans and diamond teams and the way it works, come a place like that, the sky's the limit.
Over my career, I look back and the only, you know, back in the 90s and noughties, probably the same time as you, the only way that you had a sort of, you could scratch the business owner itch was to start your own from scratch and bootstrap, right? And there were stories littered, successful and failures littered everywhere, and you're one of the successful ones. Congratulations. But these days, younger people just have access to more information. I mean, things like this very podcast where you can hear about other people's business models, we just didn't have, and we just thought you had to thug it out, so to speak. More people now are valuing working in a team, which people loved working in a team, but also having shares,
yeah.
Right? So, and I wonder, and in fact, it was literally the last podcast I did. It was actually a licensee podcast. The reason why he left the firm was he was promised equity and it didn't happen. Mm. And I'm not going to mention the firm, but he's now got 60 people in his business and his new one, right? So probably would have should have given the guy some equity.
Yeah.
So I think now people are more interested in that transparency because, I mean, you can now just go on chat or go on an AI thing and just, I could literally type here, list financial planning practices within 10 kilometers of where I am now who have employee share schemes.
Yeah.
It's wild.
It is.
And to your point around, this is not designed clearly to deter anyone who wants to go their own path and doing it. But you and I both, it's quite lonely. Despite the fact working with a lot of clients, having to set up the internet, the office, the file, whatever.
But being a CEO sucks.
Yeah.
Like, mate, there's no one. No, I bet you've never got an award. Oh, you always give them out.
You're going to say thank you.
No, I'm just saying.
We get thank yous at Tribeca, I should say.
No, but I'm saying quite often it is lonely to do it. And this is a big business. There's 20-odd people, but most practices that don't have that.
No. And unashamedly, Roxy, my job here is to make it so good, not comfortable, but so good that people don't want to leave. And I'm looking at, we want people who are on the side of being an entrepreneur and self-employed and give volunteer effort. The reward needs to be here. And if they get the end for them in that is, and I'm part of a tribe and I have all this infrastructure and it's a known quantity, and we know we're safer in numbers, but we also know we're braver in numbers. So that's the deliberate positive strategy for us. How do people have the best of both worlds?
That's right. And look, given that you've called it Tribeca and not Watson Inc. is I was going to say it's Elementary Watson, but that's an overused gag. But it can be, people can lean in and can make it their own. And right now, you know, I normally ask people what they're looking for, but you have very aggressive client acquisition targets. You're running programs to increase client referrals. Yeah. It looks like you're open for anyone at any one of those sort of positions within your diamond to come on board. If they wanted to reach out to you, what's the best way?
Yeah, best way is go on our website that you mentioned earlier, tribecafinancial.com.au. Obviously, email address on there, and please reach out. We do pride ourselves on being a business that where obviously clients will always respond, but also people. If people spend the time putting a resume in or making an inquiry, we always respond. And the other thing too, Roxy, you know, people listening to this, if they're looking for knowledge, I really like the giving back or the legacy piece. So if people want to have a conversation, not about joining Tribeca, but a coffee, I will tell them every mistake I've made. I'm happy to share that because hopefully they'll avoid making them as well. So I often, maybe it's a bit unconventional, but if I see people who've started something or whatever on LinkedIn, I'll reach out to them and go, great, well done for being brave. If I can help in any way, let me know.
Well, you've just defined the business model of Ensemble. You know, it's the fantasy piece that I had that now exists that I would have loved to have in my 20s and 30s, where I can kind of where I can get the best advice, not on their successes but also on what to look out for. Yeah. And you know, we spoke on air and off air that you know, this is now 20-odd years, and it feels like the last three or four were the best three or four, and you're heading in the right trajectory.
Yeah, I think, you know, we're not into the J curve yet, I don't think. So you look at where we come from, the clients we serve, 1150,
yep,
wanting to go to 5,000 where we get to that target, but it's about having a single-minded target. Yeah, I think, you know, it's been good, and I think the best is yet to come. And by having a this amount of scale and playing to people's strengths, seeing a lot more enjoyment in the work. And I can speak to that personally as well. I think I'm working on things that I can work at 8-10 hour day, whatever it is now, and not be start with as much finish with as much energy, because I love what I'm doing.
Well, with that, we're in the room that's actually labeled Honesty. I've just seen your red cattle dog,
yeah,
come
Cora,
past the
Cora. Shout out to Cora,
yep, a big listener, Cora. I've often smashed the comments, all anonymous, but I know who you are. Nothing that rough. Anyway, I'm done with the jokes. But you've built a good quality business. You're still quite a young chap, you are not backwards in putting yourself out there as far as the clients you want, the people you want as well. Sometimes I think businesses like yours, people think that you might be aloof or you might be beyond talking to the university entrant or someone like that. You've just put on the record that you're far from that.
I love people being brave. If people are brave enough, like that guy that walked into our office during that, he spent an hour with us that day. If you're brave enough, we'll honour that.
And look, I think it also then works for your clients. And if you're a client or prospective client, listening today, there was no scripting in this. This is, you know, what you see is what you get. Well, the website is pretty close to what these guys are after. And on behalf of Ensemble, you know, it's good to come down to Melbourne, be face to face with advisors. We've got 44 events, and if you're an Ensemble member, you're getting access to a lot of those. And on behalf of myself, thank you very much for your candid time today, Ryan. And I wish you, your family and your extended family here all the success.
Thanks, Roxy. I really enjoyed the conversation.
Cheers, mate.